The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn
Beck. A serial bomber is terrorizing the residents of Austin, Texas. Three package bomb explosions have killed two people and injured three others. The first package exploded March 2nd, killing a 39-year-old man. The second and third packages both exploded yesterday, killing a 17-year-old boy and wounding two women. A boy went out to his front porch, picked a package up, brought it into the kitchen with his mom. It blew up, killing him. The second package exploded just a few hours later, about 5 miles from the site of the first. This time, it was a 75-year-old woman. She stepped outside, picked up a package, and it exploded on her porch. She survived, but she is in critical condition. Police don't know if the victims are specifically being targeted yet. However, the stepfather of the man killed on March 2nd is close friends with the grandfather of the 17-year-old killed in the first explosion yesterday. Both men, one a retired pastor, the other a dentist, are well known in the black community. Police are not ruling out this as a potential hate crime. The two victims have been black and one was Hispanic. Austin's interim police chief told the media that police see similarities among the three explosions. They believe they are related. Austin police are warning residents don't touch any suspicious packages. How many times do you come home and there's packages on your doorstep? You don't even know what it is. I mean, you're getting so many, at least we are because of Amazon. We get so many things from Amazon that I don't know what the hell it is. Oh, it's soap. Oh, it's a bomb. So far, police have not released any information about the suspects or the motivation. They do not believe the attacks are tied to the South by Southwest Music and Media Conference that is going on now in Austin. Investigators also don't believe the packages were delivered by the post office or other delivery services. They appear to have been left on people's doorsteps overnight. Our governor, great governor of the great state of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott, announced a $15,000 reward for any information leading to an arrest. And we keep our fingers crossed that we saw the last two yesterday. The explosions are tragic. The FBI will catch the vicious murderer behind them. In light of the other recent tragedy that has dominated the national conversation, it's apparent in this case that packages are just as dangerous. But you'll notice nobody's really covering this one. And nobody's saying we have to do something. Packages are killing people. It's not the package. It's the person behind the package.
It's Tuesday, March 13th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, if you saw the movie The Darkest Hour with Winston Churchill, about Winston Churchill, you didn't really realize how much trouble England was in with the Nazis. I mean, I have always known it was bad. I didn't realize it was days before a collapse. And the British people stood and they stood their ground and they didn't act like the French who just kind of ran away. They stood against all odds. And in 1942, things started to really turn around and the British routed Rommel's forces in North Africa, drove the Nazis out of Egypt. And it was a huge turning point. But it was nowhere even close to the end. The darkest days were still ahead. And Winston Churchill stood in front of colleagues at London's Mansion House, and he talked about the rout, and he broke the news to the British people, and he said this.
Ah, this is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end. But it is perhaps the end of the beginning.
The end of the beginning. I want to talk to you about the end of the beginning here. We have always found a way to butcher each other. We've always found a way to devalue people. We talk about the sins of America all the time. African Americans enslaved, the Chinese, the Irish. If you're different, but it's not an American thing. It's a human thing. It happens all the time. And the more we make it into stories just to get each other elected or get somebody to lose, or quite frankly, as Hillary Clinton did in India yesterday in a shameful way, calling Americans racist and sexist, the more we try to make this into a tool instead of something that we should learn from, we're going to continue to slide down a hill. In 1973, Supreme Court made the devaluation of human life a protected law. The beginning of the end of life. Roe versus Wade. Most people see the legalization of abortion as the ultimate end game, but it really isn't. One side sees it as a huge victory. The other side says it's a huge defeat, but it is really... It is only Act Two out of a three-act play. Act One saw the rise of the eugenicists after the turn of the century, and those eugenicists were here in America. We taught Germany after Germany taught us. They taught us about better living through science. And then we taught them about sterilization. We taught them about let's get rid of the undesirables. That is the real birth of Planned Parenthood. In fact, it was the West, it was George Bernard Shaw that was the one who came up with the idea of the gas chamber. You know, a humane way to rid yourself of undesirables. The audio of George Bernard Shaw, the beloved playwright. He spoke and said, I think we should line people up and ask them, can you explain and justify yourself?
But there are an extraordinary number of people whom I want to kill. Not in any unkind or personal spirit, but it must be evident to all of you, you must all know half a dozen people at least, who are no use in this world, who are more trouble than they are worth. I think it would be a good thing to make everybody come before a properly appointed board, just as he might come before the income tax commissioners, and say every 5 years or every 7 years, just put him there and say, sir or madam, now will you be kind enough to justify your existence? If you can't justify your existence, if you're not pulling your weight in the social vote, if you're not producing as much as you consume, or perhaps a little more, then clearly we cannot use the big organization of our society for the purpose of keeping you alive.
How is George Bernard Shaw still a hero in this world? I know at least half a dozen people that we ought to kill. He's not joking. He's serious. It was this group of people that Margaret Sanger was with, and Margaret Sanger that saw sterilization and abortion as a way to achieve a master race. Now, that's what the Nazis did. But we've changed the word murder now in America to choice. I read an op-ed in the Washington Post over the weekend, and it just won't leave me alone. Margaret Sanger led her crusade on what she called, quote, the rising stream of the unfit. Now, who was unfit? Well, many times that was meant as the African Americans. She was a horrible, horrible racist. 79% of Planned Parenthood's abortion clinics now are in Black or Hispanic communities. 36% of all abortions in the U.S. were performed on African Americans, and yet they only make up 13% of the population. It's worse with Hispanics. 21% of all abortions are performed on Hispanics, and they only make up 7% of the population. If Margaret Sanger were alive today, she would cheer at this. But it wasn't just immigrants. It wasn't just people who weren't white. It was also, and I quote, the feeble-minded idiots and morons. Surely you know half a dozen feeble-minded or idiots or morons. So in the Washington Post article over the weekend, one of the editors admitted that people with Down syndrome live happy and fulfilled lives. But four paragraphs later, she says, most children with Down syndrome have mild to moderate cognitive impairment. Down syndrome is a life-altering situation for the entire family. It's limited capacity for independent living and financial security. So if I can translate, someone with Down syndrome is a burden on the wallet. Somebody who is consuming more than they can make, or perhaps a little less. And the new shocking justification for murder is the expense on the family and the government is caused to end the life. This is breaking out all over the world. Last night on television, I showed you just a horrific television scene that is brand new that came out from the Dutch National Institute for Public Health. And they're explaining to a man with Down syndrome how much he costs society. And he is comprehending, but I don't know if he's comprehending that they're talking about, you should be liquidated. And he says, I didn't realize I was costing so much money. Then they ask the expert, who else is a drain on society like him? With him standing there. Well, the elderly. This is the same argument that is made by Ruth Marcus in the Post. North Dakota, Ohio, Indiana, Louisiana, and Utah have proposed legislation to stop Down syndrome abortions. But legal groups are already gearing up to invoke Roe versus Wade and crush it, and they'll be able to do it. Does life have any value? When life has no value, it's more than just the unborn that become expendable. And who are we going to wipe out next? By the way, they're saying that they're going to cure Down syndrome. No, you're not curing it. You're just killing all of them. Hitler wasn't curing Judaism. He was killing all of the Jews. Who should we go next? How about the autistic? How about the autistic? Who's next on our list? How about those who are, you know, we just talked about this just the other day. That maybe Christians should start really taking something on, and maybe we should go in and become foster parents. All of us as Christians, all churches should start to really push being a foster parent, because there are all these kids in foster parent waiting for foster parents and aren't getting homes, so they're in the group homes, and if they grow up without a good foster parent, they're destined for a life of crime. Why don't we just kill all of them? I want to play Frank Stevens. He has Down syndrome. He lectures at universities. He's spoken at the White House. And this is audio of him speaking in front of Congress about the value of his life. Listen.
And members of the committee. Just so there is no confusion, let me say that I am not a research scientist. However, no one knows more about life with Down syndrome than I do. Whatever you learn today, please remember this. I am a man with Down syndrome, and my life is worth living.
Forget the part of my life is worth living. What he uttered were the same words that Martin Luther King uttered, the same exact words that broke the back of slavery. I am a man. You know, the Germans started executing those with Down syndrome in 1939. Hitler made a case that it was compassionate. And he executed the first baby that was born deformed in 1939. And then they marched into Poland, and he used that as the time to exterminate all the undesirables. And so he did. He started a program, and it was in the hospitals, but the people of Germany, the same people that voted for Adolf Hitler, found it so offensive that they rose up in 1941 and caused the government to claim, at least, that they would not do it anymore because they found it abhorrent. At least the Nazis were trying their evil scheme to make a master race. We're just aborting kids because it's gonna be hard. That's the thing. I didn't want that as a parent. I wanted something fun. I wanted something easier than that. It's gonna be hard. I think if we let this stand, we are on the road of outdoing even those who voted for Adolf Hitler.
Glenn Beck.
I'd love to hear from you on this issue. I'm hoping that I'm not the only one kept awake by this story from the Washington Post and this growing disturbing trend. The New York Times even took offense to now something that is being called creating singletons. And what that is killing the twin, the perfectly healthy twin, because you don't want twins. And so if you have twins, you go in and you have to choose, which one do you want? Sophie's Choice is just like that. Isn't that great? You have to choose which child dies and which one lives, but you're not killing them. You're just creating a simpleton. You're a simpleton. That's it. Just a simpleton? Back in a second.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Buck Sexton, a good friend of ours and a guy who served as a CIA officer in the Counterterrorism Center, the Office of Iraq Analysis, tours of duty as an intelligence officer in Iraq and Afghanistan. He also has briefed senior U.S. officials, including the President of the United States, and also served as New York Police Department Intelligence Division, working on counterterrorism issues. We welcome Buck Sexton, who is way overqualified to be on this program. How are you, Buck?
Glenn, great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. But I forgot to add one thing. Also now heard on over 100 stations across the country in the Buck Sexton Show, and you can hear him on the Blaze Radio Network as well, and we're thrilled to have you. So can I just tick down a couple of things that have broken, and it broke during the show, so I wasn't able to really wrap my arms around all of this. Rex Tillerson is leaving, and it's kind of a crucial thing. At this time, we have two things happening, possible meeting in North Korea with the president. Also, Theresa May said yesterday, giving Russia 36 hours to explain this use of a nerve agent that has taken down 21 people in the UK. And if you don't have a good explanation, we're going to look at this as unlawful action against the UK. Tell me, first of all, what it means to lose Rex Tillerson.
I think that part of what the official explanation has been so far is true, and I think that part of it is just personal. So I'll start with the part of it that has to do with policy, because I think that's what people...
That's all I care almost, about.
Yeah, that's what people actually care about,
yeah.
Right? And we can dispense with the other one pretty quickly. But first off, on North Korea, you need to make sure that you've got somebody who is on board with the vision that the president has here for this negotiation, which is a huge risk, Glenn. I mean, there's no question that sitting down with Kim Jong-un could have negative diplomatic ramifications. But I would just say that up to this point, we've had multiple administrations try to stop the North Korean nuclear missile program, and they've all failed.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't even really done much to pause it for any meaningful length of time.
Mm-hmm.
So something different has to be done, and a disruption to the continuum of North Korean negotiation and failure has to occur. And so Trump is, whether you think it's a Hail Mary or you think this is a strategic brilliance or whatever it may be, he needs somebody who's on board. I don't think he believed that Tillerson fit into that category.
Right.
On Russia, Glenn, I know people are pointing this out because the timing, given that you just had what was almost certainly Russian agents poisoning a former Russian intelligence officer and his daughter, and Theresa May has come out, as you pointed out, and this is a major diplomatic and international kerfuffle. But Pompeo is no slouch on calling out Russia either. So I think that is less of a factor than it may seem at first. Pompeo was on the Sunday shows, actually, just 48 hours ago, really taking it to Russia. So I don't think that is what happened here.
Yeah.
And then just real quickly, Glenn, because folks know about this, but yeah, on a personal level, I think it really bothers Trump that he heard that Tillerson, his Secretary of State, called him a moron. And I think with Trump and in Trump's world, that matters a whole lot.
Oh, I think it does too.
Take of that what they may.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants, you know, an underling calling you, if you're in charge, in the public, a moron. I think that was foolish of Tillerson, and not helpful at all.
Buck, I always think. Go ahead, Glenn.
Bucky, this is Stu. Hi, how are you? I hope you're doing
hey,
well.
Stu.
Good,
what's up, my friend?
Good to hear from you. You mentioned this briefly, and I wanted to see if, is it fair to say that Pompeo is one of the harshest people on Russia in the administration? It's an interesting choice.
Yeah, I think it is fair to say that. And that's
been a good thing.
Yeah, that's been clear for a long time. Like, Mike Pompeo is first and foremost a patriot. I can tell you the people that I know from inside and outside of government say he's the real deal, and he really cares about what's going on, and he cares about the country first and foremost. He's not a Trumpist or a Trumper or a Trumpot or any of that stuff. He takes his job with deadly seriousness, which he should because of what he's been dealing with as CIA director and will be dealing with, particularly going into these North Korea nuclear negotiations as Secretary of State. So, yes, dude, there's no question that if you were trying to do this for some reason to appease Russia, Pompeo would be the worst choice that you could come up with from within the administration. And despite what everyone says, there are a lot of people who want these jobs. So it's not like he has to pick the nearest name that he knows. The Pompeo choice, I think, is a strong one. Trump gets along with him, and they're aligned on policy, and that really matters. And we all want them to be aligned on North Korea. This is one where partisanship should really go by the wayside, because, Stu, if they don't figure this thing out, I really worry that the only two options become learning to live with a North Korea with nukes that can hit America and more nukes that can hit America over time, or a military strike, which is honestly pretty terrifying.
So that was the main concern from Tillerson, is you've got to expend every other option before you go to a sit down with the president of the United States. However, I think we've pretty much done that over the years. I mean, I'm willing to do this, but people have to understand that once that meeting is over, if nothing is solved, we either live with it or we go to war.
I don't see a third option, Glenn. Yeah. I think that's why at this point, it's also tough to look at what's being said, and you feel this whiplash, because originally it was Trump is the warmonger. His tweets are going to force a nuclear exchange with North Korea. This is terrible. And now it's, whoa, what's with Trump doing all this crazy diplomacy all of a sudden?
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, the shift has happened really quickly. And I think
it does seem to happen quickly.
It does.
Buck, you mentioned this too, because a lot of people, I think, look at this and say, hey, look, we've had this multi-decade issue with North Korea. Why not go and just talk to the guy and see what happens? What is the negative of that? What happens if this doesn't go right?
Well, I think that the negatives are honestly a little overstated. I mean, people keep saying, and I've seen the most common criticism leveled against this, other than by people who just have a form of Trump derangement syndrome, and they think that, you know, Kim Jong-un was part of the conspiracy with Russia or something. I mean, you know, there's crazy stuff. But from the realistic objection side, they're saying that this confers a degree of legitimacy on a regime that deserves nothing of the sort. And I completely agree with that. However, you've got a couple of differences here. We don't really have time on our side. You know, because of the failures of the previous, which have really been pretty consistent policies by different administrations leading up to this, but only a few presidents have had to deal with the possibility of a nuclear North Korea. And that is failure so far. I mean, the outreach and the diplomatic efforts have failed. So that Trump would shift from a failed strategy doesn't really surprise me. And sitting down with Kim Jong-un and giving him more legitimacy, well, what's he going to do then? Fire more missiles and advance his nuke program?
Yeah, I mean,
he's already doing that.
Yeah, I think giving him credibility a world stage. No, the nukes did that. The nukes did that. We're only meeting with him because he has nuclear-tipped missiles. That's what gave him credibility to be on the world stage, unfortunately. Let me just ask you real quick. The president said today he's going to be he's flying out to California to look at the wall. And he said Theresa May is going to be calling me this afternoon. What are the options on the table as you see it? Is there her language yesterday? I don't know if you saw it, but her language was very legalistic in ways, and almost sounded like a setup for Article 5. What do you think the options are?
You mean the response that the British Prime Minister is going to have to the poisoning of two civilians on British soil? Glenn, I think that there'll be
21 civilians. I mean, there are people in the hospital that are still in critical condition.
Right. Well, it's intentionally trying to get two, and then the other one. Yeah,
correct.
I think that it's going to be very rhetorically strong. But look, we have limited options beyond economic and diplomatic versions of going after the Russians at this point. We already have sanctions in place. You could see the expulsion of diplomats. I think, Glenn, that's the most likely scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Which is from the diplomats' world. That's a you know, that's when everyone gets a bit huffy and upset. I mean, that's a big deal. But really, thinking through it beyond that, I don't see a response that will be much more robust. And I think the Russians knew that, and that's why the Russians... I mean, Glenn, what they did was reckless and open. It's not the first time they've done this.
I know.
So,
I know. And it was a chemical agent. It's a weapon of mass destruction. This is what the red line was over in Syria. And they brought it into the country, and they brought one that only is made in the former Soviet Union, so everybody knew exactly who did it. I'm just wondering if she's going to be looking for, you know, a unified NATO response that could go just beyond them kicking people out, but asking us to kick people out or take some additional economic sanctions.
Well, I don't think the Europeans, and there's a whole other complicated discussion of why, including how Germany gets very cold in winter and needs a lot of natural gas, which happens to come to it from Russia. I don't think that there's going to be a response that's as unified as we'd like it to be on this one. You mentioned the nerve agent. They think it's Novichok. So this is very clearly, this is the equivalent of leaving, you know, WMD fingerprints, in a sense, on an assassination attempt. Mm-hmm. And it is terrible, and it's showing how brazen the Russians are willing to be. But, Glenn, you look at the toolbox that we have and what we've done in the past. We've already put sanctions on Russia to get them to stop what they're doing in Ukraine. We've already tried the diplomatic and economic approach. And the truth is, we don't really have a will or a desire for a military approach of any kind, and the Russians know that. And that's why they'll have agents smear Novichok, which is more deadly than VX gas, people say, on some person in a park in Britain.
So let me ask you one last question. As a former CIA agent, how dead is the Russian agent that I think screwed this up? I don't think it was the intent to, you know, put 21 other people in the hospital. How is that guy? Is that guy, you know, hiding someplace and not long for the world?
Well, the message was from Putin that if you betray us, we're going to get you. And I think that message is actually received, Glenn. There's a long history of the Russians doing this, in fact, stretching all the way back to a, you know, ricin-tipped assassination with an umbrella. And I mean, that was back in the KGB era. This is not new. The Russians want everyone to know that there's an extraterritorial score settling. I mean, this is a global – Russia operates as a mafia state, and it does so even outside of its own borders. So the message is sent and received, I think, from folks who might either be defectors, speak out against the Russian regime, betray Putin and the Kremlin. And I think that the sloppier and the more terrifying the chemical, the better the message is from their perspective. So the fact that you're mentioning these additional casualties, that just shows what the Russians are willing to do to send a message. And I don't think they have much in the way of regrets, Glenn, at least not at the Kremlin at the top reaches.
Buck, thank you.
Being in radio and television, you move around, you know, every 6 months or so, basically for your entire career. So I've dealt with a lot of real estate agents, and I've moved a lot of times. And the difference between the best real estate agents we've dealt with and the worst is immense. I mean, it's a difference between making an experience, you know, really enjoyable to a complete disaster that hangs over your head the entire time it's going on. That's why realestateagentsitrust.com exists. There's a network of over 1,200 agents all over America, and what they do is they look at marketing plans, and they interview them, and they find out who are the best agents available to make your transaction go smoothly. They sort through them, and then they give you easy access to this list. You just go to realestateagentsitrust.com, and you give them your area, and they give you the best agent around you. It's that simple. Let these agents earn your business. Get moving with realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck.
Paul in Michigan. Hello, Paul. Welcome to the Glenn Beck program.
Good morning.
How are you, sir? How can I help you?
I'm doing well. Long-time listener, man. I'm a huge fan of your show.
Thank you.
But I got to say, after today, I'm even more of a fan. Hearing you touch on the subject of Down syndrome, got to admit, it kind of brought a tear to my eye this morning, you know, to hear you talk about how there's people out there that are for abortions with Down syndrome pregnancies. And the other thing that brought a tear to my eye is really just hearing that there's people in influential positions such as yourself that actually care enough to touch on the subject. I'm a 39-year-old father of a 15-year-old boy with Down syndrome. And people just, I don't think they have any clue what capabilities these kids, these adults have. And I really want to say thank you for you know, hitting on the subject this morning. It resonates with me.
You're welcome, Paul. It's a shame that you feel like you have to call to say thank you. I mean, it is. We are going down a very dangerous road to where we're saying now, people who clearly have quality of life, clearly are functioning and are good and decent in society, and if I may say, is imaged as the most gentle of lambs, that we are a society that is willing to say, yeah, let's get rid of all of them. If we say that to those with Down syndrome, good heavens, who won't we say that about?
Exactly.
God bless you, Paul. Thank you so much. Let me go to Thad. And do I have time? Thad, real quick.
Hello.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I've got about a minute. Go ahead.
Okay, hi. I have a 26-year-old son with Down syndrome, and he has the same dreams. He wants to go to college. He has to say he has a part-time job. He wants to live alone. He wants a family. He wants ambition. He has love. He has emotion. All the same things, and he has an added benefit. He has Down syndrome, and I love every day of his life. So those people who challenge that, to me, are just totally misinformed and idiots.
Thanks. Thanks, Thad. I appreciate it. I honestly tell you, this has kept me awake over the last few nights, and I don't know how to help. I've reached out to some organizations. One of them, you know, and justifiably so, I guess, they don't want to get political. I don't either. I just want to help, and I don't know how to help. But this torch has been lit, and I am moving forward in any way. You have any suggestions on how I can help? Please let me know.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.